You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Jenna Boscarden, manager of digital marketing for Smart Equine.
And I'm Ashley Lecomte-Lozich, head of R&D for Smart Equine. Coming up on today's show, we're here to talk about what is hopefully soon coming to an end, blanketing.
We know it's a hot button item for a lot of horse owners. We are in the Facebook groups too, trust me. But the goal today here is just to share a lot of information on the topic and then let you do what you do best, which is make the right decision for your horse based on all the nitty-gritty details that only you and your horse's care team can know. Per usual, we might have bitten off a bit more than we can chew in one episode, but let's give it the old horse girl try, shall we?
Smart solutions, trusted voices. Your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Health Cast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinarian or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinarian or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
All right, let's get into it and start from the ground up, so to speak. Over the years, I feel like a lot of non-horse people have asked me the same question when we pass by horses turned out without blankets, which is, how are they comfortable? How don't they get cold? Aren't they freezing? And I mean, the answer is sometimes, but Ashley, I feel like you probably have some good information on like when horses actually do get cold and how we know what their coat is doing or not doing for them.
Sure. Yeah. So I know that this is such a strange concept, but there once was a time when horses were wild and lived outside. I know. Shudder the thought. And even there are still some wild horses in the United States that live outside in harsh conditions, you know, on the west plains of the country. And they somehow, some way, they make it through. So yeah, of course, horses can get cold. There's so many different things that go into, you know, how a horse keeps themselves warm. They were designed to be outside. That is how they were built. Mother Nature made them to be grazing animals that needed to be constantly eating, and therefore they were kind of always exposed to the elements. So their bodies and their coats were built to be very well equipped for cold weather. So we get very chilly. We don't have a whole bunch of hair all over us anymore. You know, evolution turned us into weenies, but the horses, they're pretty good at keeping themselves warm.
Yeah, and I know that with that, like, there's other factors that go into it. Like, obviously, they have a history of being creatures that are designed for this. But when you look at every horse in your barn, whether it's five horses or 40 horses, they're not all going to look the same, right?
We're
so,
not.
Like, some things that we also have to take into account are things like their body condition. Like, are these horses that burn energy and burn fat by existing, or are these horses that retain fat by just staring at a flake of hay across the barn? Like, that makes a big difference on, you know, whether or not they're actually going to feel the effects of the weather.
Of course, right? Like insulation. So body condition, if you have a night, like Andy, I'm just going to keep using Andy and Tilly as my like polar opposites.
I mean, they're the perfect examples.
They really are. So, I mean, Andy, really big dude, you know, stays well groceried, you know, year round, regardless of what he's eating. So Andy is an easy keeper who stays pretty nice and warm. He doesn't really grow a winter coat. So you look at body condition. He's, I would say, always going to be on the upper side of the body condition score. Not obese, but certainly not average, right? So yeah, he's carrying around a little extra for sure. His coat never really comes in too thick. So you know, this is in the opposite is true for Tilly. She has a nice, thick, fluffy coat, but she is, you know, a nice, narrow, thin-boned thoroughbred who, you know, keeps only the weight on that she needs. So a little bit different than Andy. And then you're also going to look at like what is, so you have them, their body condition, what type of coat do they grow? And then you're also going to look at the circumstances that they live in. Do they have a three-sided shed that they have access to all the time? What part of the country are you in and what type of precipitation are you getting? Are you typically going to be getting snow or are you getting like wet sleet? So it totally depends on what type of conditions they're subjected to, how well fed they are through the, we're going to use that because I don't want to give any of the horses body image issues. They're all perfect.
No, they're perfect.
I don't want to say anything mean. So we won't call them fat. We will just call them well fed.
They are well groceried.
They haven't missed many meals. We'll put it like that.
Yeah, they are provided for.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, access to shelter is a huge one. So if you have a horse that's predominantly in a stall or has a like a stall with a run in out where they can decide for themselves whether they're going outside or inside. Or if there are horses that live out on pasture, do they have a three-sided shed with that is a windbreak for them as well? So all of these things kind of come together to help you decide, you know, how or if your horse should be blanketed.
Yeah. And I know too, something that you said about like your location within the country mm-hmm. or world is really important. And not only that, but like the recent timeline of that too, because I know that we've had horses come up from Florida who have never lived in New England before. And even if they are a nice stout little quarter horse that grows a coat, they're still not used to it. They're still going to feel differently than, you know, the thoroughbred who's been here for 15, 20 years, who's accustomed to the weather. So I think that's also something that I went to school out in South Dakota and rode on the equestrian team there. And so like those horses that were, you know, born and bred there, no problem. Turn them out all day. They're totally fine. But the moment somebody would come into the team and bring her horse from the south, the east, the west, it was a totally different story for them, right. Even if they looked great. So I thought that was a really interesting thing too, that like the recent timeline of your horse's location makes
totally
a difference too.
Yeah, we actually have a horse that was due in February coming from New Mexico. And I don't know what life has been like on the East Coast for you, but Chicago saw like a polar vortex for like the last 2 weeks of January. And she called and was like, hey, I don't think that my mare is going to do very well coming from New Mexico to negative 30 wind chills. So we're going to hold off for a bit. And I was like, oh, that's probably pretty smart. That's so
really thoughtful of
her. I had not.
The logistical decision to make.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Choice.
So, I mean, certainly consider, you know, the way that your horse has been kept recently, like you just said. And, you know, we've talked so much in the past about like how consistency and keeping your horse's daily regimen the same impacts their health and the reliability of, you know, what's going on around them. So changing that obviously is a huge change to not just their physical system, but, you know, can impact their mental health and change a lot of things. So certainly keep that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely worth keeping in mind at all times, but especially in the winter when you're making these choices.
That's right.
And so we know that horses may or may not get cold based mm-hmm. on a lot of factors, which I think is going to be a common theme throughout this. But for horses who we think are cold, if we look at a horse and we're like, that one seems like it's cold, like what are you, as somebody who is very science driven and also has a barn of so many horses, like what are you looking for?
Shivering. Shivering. I'm definitely looking for shivering. Okay. So let's say we have horses in stall. We also, at my barn, we also have horses that live out. And I would say that the majority of the horses that live outside do not get blanketed for many reasons. I think one, you know, introducing something that could snag to on anything for a horse that is not, you don't have hands on that horse every day. Like these pasture horses are out in the pasture. Sometimes you don't even see them for a couple days. Right. So the less they can wear, the safer. So that's certainly one thing. But also they tend to grow really nice coats. The horses that live outside, like you're watching nature and do its thing, and they're building really nice coats. So sometimes after like a nice fluffy snow, you'll actually see them wearing snow coats. And it's so cute to look out there and like see all their backs covered in snow and it's not melting. So the first thing is you look for is, if it's been snowing, is I always look for the snow coats. If the naked horses have snow coats on their back, that's indicative of the heat being trapped and insulated their body. It's not being released. If you see that
the horse didn't want it on them, if it was cold, if it was wet,
they would shake it off. Totally. They would shake it off. But also if it starts to melt. So if you see horses with snow coats that are melting, that's typically indicative of heat is releasing through their winter coat and it's melting the snow above them. So that's certainly something to look for. And there's nothing worse than a wet, cold horse. Like cold itself, okay. Wet and cold, very bad. So the first thing you look for, I mean, like visibly that I couldn't see a horse shivering from, you know, a couple hundred yards away, but I certainly can see them wearing snow coats. So if I see their backs covered in snow, typically everything is okay. And then as you get a little bit closer, I'm always going to start just to see if they're shivering, if they look pretty content. You can even like shove your hand like under their chest. And I mean, it feels nice and toasty under there. So yeah, those are two signs that you can see with your naked eye that'll tell you if they're having a hard time or not.
Yeah. And those are like really good immediate, like, you know, in that exact moment, this horse is cold. And I know something that we watched with my gelding as he got older over the winters was if he was losing weight. He never did. He and I are both built very thick. Good for us. But the just knowing that if he was inside, which he did, he lived, and so you have a horse and getting older, has any concerns like that. I ran my hand over that horse every day that I was out there. And I know my friends and my bar manager did the same thing, just to make sure that if you felt more ribs than usual, if the hip was pointier than it was supposed to be, all of those signs that you're used to looking for in a thin horse, but just keeping an extra eye and an extra hand through a fluffy coat to make sure.
Totally. Yep. Yep, absolutely. Put hands on your horse every day, like or as often as you can. Yeah, that certainly.
Yeah. And if you can't and you have a barn friend, I know that friends and I would swap off and be like, hey, can you check mine Thursday, Friday? I got something mm-hmm. to do, but I'll be out there Saturday, Sunday if you want me to check yours. So that was always a really good just like community swap off too, whenever we could.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Every day in the freezing
cold. Yeah.
But if you can and you want to, power to you. If you don't and you don't want to, you're fair. Find a friend.
Yep. Love that. Love that.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that too is this isn't like a when you're cold, they're cold situation.
Oh, no.
This is not that.
So well, I'm just cold right now. I'm cold right now. It's like 57 degrees outside. So
in my own home, I'm a little chilly.
Right.
So
that's
I'm not going to go put a blanket on a horse just because of that. So I think that's also something that we have to keep in mind where sometimes we overthink it a little bit, where if I'm shivering, that's a bad thing. But if he's not, he's fine. But there's something with their coat, right? Like there's a term for it. You said it earlier before we started talking about this, for what it, like what the actual science behind their coat fluffing up and yeah. keeping heated.
Yeah. I mean, we do it too. It's pretty crazy. So piloerection, like when someone says like, oh, the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up. So like the tiny little muscles around all of the little hair follicles constrict and it makes the hairs stick straight up. And that allows the horse's coat that, I mean, it's nice and thick. That's great. And now that piloerection has allowed there to be some lift in the hair so that there's like a layer of retained heat around, like close to their skin. And then their hair creates almost like a little barrier for them. And then, you know, there's oils from their skin that help to kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, like weatherproof it a little bit. So nature did make them a really great tool for keeping themselves warm in most conditions. So that piloerection allows them to basically create like a nice, fluffy, cushy, warm layer of air that stays really close to their skin. That's why I mentioned if you see the snow blanket melting or the snow coat melting off their back, something they're releasing heat that should be still trapped. So that's how you know that something has kind of gone wrong there.
That's cool. So when you go and you put your hand on your horse and he's super fluffy and your hand sinks in, the coat's working. The coat's doing
working.
Its exact job.
That's right. The coat's working. Your hand should sink in. It should disappear a little bit. That's right.
That's so cool. And I know we just said it like the if you're cold, they're probably fine. But there's always a big question. I know like in my barn, like on the Facebook groups, like what is the temperature guideline for things? And like, there's 15, like you Google it and there's gonna be 15 answers that pop up. They're all gonna be slightly different.
100%.
I'm going to quickly plug that we do have something called the Ultimate Horse Blanketing Guide, and we'll put it in the comments so you guys can find it if you want, that has some ranges. But I think the main thing to really think about is like, is your horse clipped or unclipped? Where are they living? And are they, like, do they look comfortable? Do they mm-hmm. seem uncomfortable in any way? So I don't want to get too down and dirty into the temperature ranges, just because, again, I know that there's a lot of different yeah. opinions, but there's a lot of different science out there. But just keeping in mind specifically that your clipped horse and your unclipped horse have very different needs.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of what I wanted to chat about next was the clipping in the winter, because a lot of people do, a lot of people don't. So, I mean, like, from your experience as, you know, having so many horses and being such a rider yourself and having the science backing, do you have to clip in the winter?
I mean, you don't have to do anything, right? Okay. So to me, clipping is like a tool where like form follows function. So are you going to be spending your winter relaxing and going out on trail rides and enjoy, or are you spending the winter fixing the things from last show season that needed to be fixed to get ready for, you know, mm-hmm. an April show season start? If you anticipate that you're going to have a pretty intense working winter, clipping can be really helpful. I mean, I don't know like everybody's schedule out there, but I know that for me, waiting an hour and a half after my ride to cool out a wet, sweaty horse is, it's not only time consuming, but it scares the bejesus out of me. Like putting a horse away sweaty in the winter is like one of the most terrifying things that you can do. And I get super neurotic about that. So I in scenarios where I'm showing or have expectations of having a really hard working winter, I typically do like a trace clip or, you know, remove the hair around all of their vital organs and bellies so that that heat can dissipate a little bit faster. I typically wouldn't do a full clip until like the springtime when they're starting to blow coats anyways and it's warmer outside. But yeah, remember that piloerection, you are taking it away when you clip the hair down to the skin. So you have to replace that somehow. So if your horse is clipped in some way, you certainly are removing their ability to keep themselves warm and you do have to replace that. It's also worth noting that even on horses that are not clipped, if you put a blanket on top of them, the weight of that blanket can dampen down the thickness of their coat and it can actually make them colder. So you have to make sure that if you are going to blanket a horse that is not clipped, that you're replacing as much warmth as they had with their natural coat and then some. So like you're not going to put like 100-gram lightweight and think like, oh, he doesn't need much, right? He just needs a little bit because it just got a little bit colder. Well, the reality of that is that you're flattening down that beautiful, nice, thick coat and you're removing their ability to keep themselves warm. So you need to replace it and then some. So typically I'd say like we're using like 300-gram. I mean, again, totally depends on where you're at. I'm talking Chicago here. So we're using like 300-gram heavyweights to make sure that those horses are staying super toasty. And again, an easy way to tell is if you come down to the barn, you say, all right, I'm going to let him go out in his 300 weight today, see how it works. Stick your hand under his coat, see if he's nice and toasty and make sure he's not shivering. And, you know, that's kind of a guess and check because every horse is different. Every horse is going to tolerate different temperatures. Every horse is going to need more or less to keep them at a ambient, comfortable temperature.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought up like the trace clip versus the full clip because for a lot of people, you can clip differently too. Like there's just so much nuance that goes into winter blanketing and winter, you know, warmth and coldness. So for anybody who's not familiar, a trace clip is like from under their jaw all the way down their shoulder, around their belly. We always called it their racing stripe when I was in college because it really just really perked them up the first couple of days that they had it.
Yeah. But the wind gets in there.
And all of a sudden you've got a whole new animal under you. But it really helps with, like Ashley said, with like the vital organs and making sure that where they're sweating has less hair to combat. So you just have a horse that is hopefully going to get a little bit less sweaty and hopefully going to be a little bit easier to cool out. There's also versions like the blanket clip where you're clipping like their whole head and their neck and their shoulder and their belly, but you're leaving that like top layer of fur on the top of their shoulder and over their back. So like kind of keeping the snow coat portion of it. You're getting rid of a lot of it, but keeping some of it. There's the full clip where it's like their whole body. There's so many variations. So if you're like, well, I don't want to clip my whole horse naked. Great. Don't. You can clip whatever you think is important or necessary. You can try different things, put a heart in your horse's butt, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But lots and lots of different options out there. And I know the trace clip was always really popular at a lot of the barns that I've been at with a lot of the horses that I've worked with. So I'm a big, big fan of that one because putting away a sweaty horse is just not something.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like you also don't have to clip, you know, Tilly, again, doesn't have a super strenuous winter, but we opted not to clip her and she's doing okay. And in the event that she gets a little sweaty, you know, we put a cooler on and make sure that we walk her till she's dry. So it's not a compulsory thing. You don't have to clip any horses. It's just that the management after your rides or after work is going to look a little bit more laborious if you choose not to clip than it would be if they were able to dissipate that heat on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anybody, whether you're clipping or not, like we've kind of alluded to it, but just to make it super, super clear, if your horse ends whatever activity you have done with it sweaty in the winter, please, please walk them until they are cool and fully dry. Cannot overstate how important that is. If you don't have time to finish it, try handing it off to a friend or a barn worker or somebody who maybe has the time, pay a barn rat to do it. $10 or a coffee goes a long way for a lot of people. But like one of the saddest things you can do is put your horse back on your stall, sweaty and wet in the winter for so many reasons.
I try to like liken this almost to like going outside in the winter right after a shower before you blow dry your hair. You would never do that, right? Like you would never say like, I'm going to go for a walk with wet hair in the winter because that's a recipe for disaster. The same is going to be true for your horse. So that moisture that's retained in their coat, they're going to have a really hard time drying off and it's going to chill them. So certainly, like I said earlier, it's usually not the cold that gets to the horses that have nice thick coats. It's moisture. It's being wet and cold. So the best thing you can do for your horse, if you're not going to clip, is just make sure that you're using a nice wool cooler or a fleece cooler to make sure that they're, you know, dry and happy. You know, there's like a phrase, ridden hard and put away wet. Like that's not a good, that's not a, and it's a negative connotation. So, you know, the best thing you can do for them is to make sure that you put them away the same way you found them, nice and dry and warm.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that too, like if you, I know we kind of cheated the system a little bit sometimes at my barn where we would, you know, walk them until they're cool and dry. But if we just weren't 100%, but we had to go, there was nobody else to do it, we would start with a lighter blanket than what we would normally start with. So we would keep that on them for an hour or two. And then when somebody came back for night feed or for night check, we would ask, hey, can you put on their heavier or swap it for a heavier? And I don't know that that's like necessarily the route you want to go all the time, but for adult ammies who have to work or for parents or for people who have to get their kids home for whatever reason, I know that you can't always spend the full hour and a half to 4 hours of cool out. So if that's another version of just making sure that they're fully dry,
yes,
that's great. And that's a starting point at least, and you know, layering up as you go throughout the night.
I totally agree.
And I think that's part of why blankets can be so tricky for people, because there's so many options of layering and weights and things like that. So something really quick to touch on too is, like you kind of mentioned it, like grams of fill, right? Which is really just how thick and how heavy this blanket is. It's you know, stuffing for the blanket. If you hold a heavyweight blanket, you're going to feel that that is a significantly heavier blanket physically than a lightweight turnout or even a sheet. So just as like a quick rundown for anybody who's less familiar or hasn't blanketed their horse a whole bunch, 0 to 100 grams of fill is usually considered a sheet or a lightweight blanket, because there's never anything that's like that straightforward. We have to give things multiple names. But 0 to 100 can either be a sheet or a lightweight. Most common, you're going to see like the 150 to 250 grams of fill, which is a medium weight blanket. And then the big heavy hitters are, you know, 300 plus grams of fill. I think there's a Rambo that's like all the way up to 450 or maybe even 500 grams of fill. Like you can get some really heavy duty, sturdy blankets. But for anybody who is thinking about shopping for a blanket for the first time, the really big thing I want to note that we can say pretty clearly is make sure that it is a turnout and not a state.
Like, we've all made that
one
mistake,
thing
that
we all do. Every retailer, like we will name things differently, we'll put out different colors, we'll give you different assets or different features and benefits. But one thing we all do very clearly is we will label what is a stable blanket and what is a turnout blanket. So make sure if your horse is spending any time in the great outdoors, it is labeled as a turnout blanket for the weatherproofing and the waterproofing. Because like Ashley has said, like I've reiterated, nothing sadder or scarier than a wet, cold horse in the winter. And the first starting point with that is a wet horse.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you want to make sure, I mean, turnout blankets are made with more durable stitching and more durable material. So the last thing you want is to have snags and rips and tears in a nice expensive blanket that you purchased, just letting more moisture and cold air underneath it. So, I mean, for the durability of the blanket and also for the comfort of the horse, it's very important that you choose the correct product for the situation that your horse is going to be in.
Yeah. And as far as durability goes, that's a great one, because you're going to see on a lot of, you know, product pages when you're browsing websites, a denier, which is essentially just the toughness of your blanket. So the bigger the number, the better the toughness. You definitely want to look for things that say like ballistic nylon and great fun words like that, because they really do mean something. But I would be remiss if I did not shout out the fact that we do have our Smart Equine Ultimate turnouts, which we had a great conversation with Meg back in the end of 2025, I think, about how these got fully upgraded and updated. And these Ultimate turnouts have a warranty on them for a couple of years too. So it's like the 10-year indestructible guarantee. And so if you're looking for something that's going to wear and last, that's one that a lot of horses I know and my own horse has worn over the years. So that's always a great one too. If you can find anything that has a warranty on it, blankets aren't cheap. So whatever you can do to make that a little bit more feasible is always worthwhile. So then the other thing to think about too is like there's all these weights, there's all these different things that you can do, and you don't have to just put one blanket on your horse. And this sounds kind of insane for anybody who doesn't do it probably, but you can layer them. You can put, you know, a sheet, or there's some blankets out there that are, you know, called thin sillet blankets because they have a lot of thickness to them, but they're still very lightweight in comparison. And you can layer those as you need to throughout the day. So I know for my horse, for a lot of horses at my barn, we would have one blanket that was really typically supposed to be a stable blanket or a stable sheet that we would put underneath a turnout. So that would just kind of keep the warmth on them for a lot of the day, because when we would bring them in from outside, you have to take the turnout sheet off. And if that, or the turnout blanket off. And if that comes off and all of a sudden they have a cold blanket on them for the stable and the stall, that always felt bad to me personally. And maybe they were fine with it, but I always didn't like it. So there were times where I would put my horse out in like a medium weight stable blanket with a turnout sheet over top of him to protect it. So that way he was kind of getting the best of both worlds. And then when it got really, really cold, we could take that medium weight stable blanket and then layer a medium or even a heavyweight turnout blanket over it. It sounds maybe crazy to some of you. Maybe this is a very hunter jumper thing to do, but it definitely gave me a lot of peace of mind and gave us a lot of flexibility in how much weight and how much warmth I wanted to put on my horse at any given moment, depending on where he was.
Yeah, I don't think that sounds crazy. I mean, you think about dressing yourself for the day. And yeah. I mean, I'm looking at our house in Tampa and the overnight low for next Tuesday is 36 and the high for the following day is 72. So let's say that's a big, I mean, that's a huge range. So, and in Florida, the horses are typically going out at night, or at least when I have Andy in Florida, he goes out at night. So when they get turned out at, say, 3 p.m., the situation that they're in is going to be very different than what it's going to be at 3 a.m., right? So I think the idea of layering is brilliant because you don't have, like, imagine if you wear a gigantic winter coat and underneath you have a t-shirt, and then it's like warm enough that you're sweating, but not warm enough that you're cool in the t-shirt. So you take off your coat, now you're freezing, and you have nothing in between. I think it's a great idea to do the layers because not only do you have the ability to do what you just said and, you know, have a stable blanket underneath that you can just take off your turnout blanket over it, but you also can, you can blanket them in smaller increments. You're talking, you just said 0 to 100, 150 to 250, 300. Well, now you're able to kind of Tetris your way to the perfect blanket by using a couple different ones. I think that's really smart.
Thank you. And it also makes me feel better about the amount of coats that I keep in the back.
Yes, that's it. That's right. Yes. It's just because we want to make sure we are prepared. That's why we carry five different jackets with us in the barn car. That's right. Kind of like, no, I totally agree. I think that's a really wise choice.
Thanks. I feel a lot better about what I've been doing. So I appreciate that. And something that we've said a lot throughout this, but that like really just can't be overstated, especially for blanketing, is that like it's a very personal choice for your horse. Yes, for you, but mostly for your horse. And like if you're like Ashley and you have two horses who are very different, just because you like putting a medium on Andy doesn't mean that you can do the same thing for Telly. So I think that's something that's like really, really important to keep in mind, is that every horse truly is so individual and so unique that you do need to treat them as such, even if it makes it a little bit more obnoxious or difficult or challenging throughout the winter to do so.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like even horses, okay, so I typically live and breathe by the, it's better to be too cold than too warm, because as soon as they start sweating and that sweat gets, I mean, that's pretty much the same as riding them and putting them away wet. If they're over blanketed and they get too warm and they start sweating, that's a bet. So I typically default to it's better to be too cold than too warm. Tilly and I feel like we are very similar in our likeness. Both of us are Goldilocks. We can't be too cold, can't be too hot. We have to be just right. And I think that that is just so interesting, because I would never make those choices for Andy. And I think it is so cool to see that 60 horses can live in one barn and that all of them are subjected to the exact same air temperature in the exact same situation. And they are all having different experiences based on their body condition score, based on how much forage they have in front of them, et cetera. So making sure that you're trying to customize your horse's experience to directly what they need is going to be very, very helpful.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said too for not letting like the comparison culture get in the way. Cause if you go out and your horse has a medium weight blanket on and they look perfectly content in their stall, but your horse's neighbor is all the way done up with like a whole turtleneck situation and he looks cozy as well, like that's okay. Mm-hmm. Just like me and my husband are never at the same temperature at the same time, your horse and their stablemates are also not going to be at the same temperature at the same time. So don't let yourself get in your head about that. You know your horse best. Make sure that you're just doing what they need and not what anybody else is doing for their horse. Ask questions, have conversations. Like, community is very important and we can always learn from each other. But don't doubt yourself if your horse is comfortable and looks comfortable.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And if you have like a barn manager or staff that sees your horse in the wee hours of the morning for turnout, you can ask them like, hey, I tried a different blanket last night. You know, how was Andy this morning? Did he seem warm? Did he seem sweaty? Should I change something? So the people who are getting to interact with your horses day in and day out, they may have some really great insight as well.
Yeah, I think that's always worth touching base with. Like, they're you might think that you're out there all the time, but those are the people who are out there truly all the time and can give you even more insights if you have a minute to ask them. Maybe don't ask them like in the middle of doing, you know, turn in, but find a time when they maybe seem like they have a moment to answer your questions. That's always worth
That's
it.
Right.
And also, like you kind of said, like you just said, you know, changing your blanket, did that work or not? It's very, very okay to, you know, spend a week doing something, not sure you liked it, and do something else. You do not have to stick with whatever blankets you started with at the beginning of the season. You can always change it up, try something new, change it next year. Like your horse next year might not be the horse you have this year, both like actual physical horse and or just like their physical body condition. So always worth just giving everybody that permission that it's okay to change your mind. It's okay to try things that are new and different.
Absolutely.
The one thing that is not a personal choice though is the way you clip your blankets. So just my little soapbox for the day is if you have a blanket that clips in the front or has like the little like lobster claw clips anywhere on the blanket, please make sure that it faces inwards towards your horse. And anybody who already knows this, feel free to roll your eyes at me, but it's still worth saying. For anybody who doesn't know, facing them in towards your horse's body versus out towards their stall or towards their pasture, it just makes it so that they can't get caught on things. So they're less likely to get caught on things if the clip is facing inward. If it's facing outward, think about it. If your horse pushes up against their water bucket, against the latch on their gate, against a tree branch or a piece of fencing that's sticking out weird, your horse is now stuck and trapped. And we all know that horses are super rational when stuck and trapped and always consider who's paying the vet bills in those cases, right?
That just like made my neck hairs pile erect. Like, I'm not getting you telling me, I'm like envisioning my horse's blanket getting stuck on a water bucket outside and then him taking the whole fence down. And it like made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. Like, that gives me the heebie-jeebies. So thank you. I don't know that I have actually really thought of that. And now I'm like also their halter. Like, my horses don't get turned out in a halter. But if they did.
Mm-hmm. Or even if you're somebody that takes your horse on like a walk, like I would, you know, walk my horse like a dog sometimes in the winter. We couldn't do stuff. Just keeping all clips wherever they are on any part of your horse's body or even yours facing in is always for the safer benefit for everybody involved. So thank you for coming to my soapbox today.
Thank you.
I will step down.
Life tips from Jenna.
We love that.
But now on to like a big question that I almost forgot to ask you.
Sure.
Like, what do you do if you can't blanket? Like, what if you just can't blanket for whatever the reason is? Like, what are other ways besides a blanket we can keep our horses warm? Are there ways?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, the best thing you could do if you can't blanket is don't clip your horse and then keep so much hay in front of them. Like, give the best thing you can. And listen, hold on. I'm actually going to change. I think the best thing you can do for a horse in the winter, whether they are clipped, unclipped, blanketed, or unblanketed, is to provide them free choice access to hay the best that you can. If it can't be free choice, then just make sure it's adequate when they do get it. If they get breakfast, lunch, and dinner, make sure there's a ton in there. You can always provide it in like hay nets to try to, you know, stretch it out a little bit. If they are a chunky boy, if they are well groceried and they don't need as much hay, then you can put it into a hay net to keep it longer so that they're constantly eating. So, you know, horses are hindgut fermenters.
Yeah, one for the smart equine slogan.
That's right.
Because those things work so well and last so long. So yeah, big, big shout out to those for my well groceried horse.
I love it. Yeah, a hay nut always helps. But I mean, the science behind this is that horses are hindgut fermenters. So the microbiome and the gut bugs that we'll call them in their hindgut, in their cecum, are fermenting this long stem forage. And that is an exothermic reaction. Now, we've talked about this before. It's releasing heat into their body. So them eating is keeping them warm. That is such an essential piece of this. And when we talk about horses that are like living out in the wilderness with their beautiful snow coats and their piloerected hair, they're eating whatever forage they can find, you know, they are eating. So making sure that your horse is like, I think I've said it in other podcasts or other episodes, rather, this is not the time to restrict hay. So if your horse is a little pudgy, like this is not the time. There is no Weight Watchers in the winter time when you're trying to keep your horse warm. So that thank you for coming to my TED Talk on long stem forage in the winter. You can't possibly.
Very worthwhile.
You can't possibly feed your horse too much hay in the winter, especially if you have him outside or he is, you know, braving harsh conditions. That's the best thing you can possibly do for him.
I love that. So blanketed or not blanketed, clipped or not clipped, the best thing you can do, forage. But also if they're not blanketed.
Oh, please, and definitely forage. Sure. Yes. Okay. I mean, that's so like the way we do it outside is for our horses that live out, we have like hay huts with round bales and we replenish those round bales whenever they need to be replenished. So there is no.
Can you describe the hay hut?
Yeah, we actually, I'm sure you've seen like the green plastic like hay feeders that have like little holes in them, or maybe you haven't. Okay. So those are like the typical hay feeders. We built our own. They have like a little hat on them. Like it looks like a well, like what you would imagine a well, with like a little bucket that gets wheeled down, but the round bale sits in the middle and it's open all around with like a roof on top of it. So it keeps the round bale dry. There's some figure, and I don't know the exact number, but I want to say that like using a feeder instead of having a round bale just sitting there helps reduce up to like 50% waste. So when you have a round bale,
oh, wow.
I know that's a lot. And when you're talking the price of hay these days, yeah. like that's can't negotiate there. So our horses that live out, they eat round bales and they live in a hay feeder so that the horses are not like getting so close to the round bale that they end up stepping on it. And that hay turns into, you know, organic matter that's shoved into the dirt. Exactly. Mud. So yeah, the round bale feeders are fantastic and our horses have access to those all day. And then whenever they get low, we replace them and we put new ones out there. So there is no rationing of hay in the wintertime. And then hopefully around now or pretty soon, the beautiful lush green grass starts to come in and the round bales become a thing of the winter. But until then, I know, right? Crossing my fingers. But until then, we're making sure that even there is some grass out there. It doesn't look happy. So we're making sure that we supplement everybody with as much hay as they need.
And I'm envisioning this where like it's truly like a roof structure. The horses are going under it too, right?
Not really. It mostly just covers the round bale itself. Like maybe their head. Maybe their heads are under it. Like they're like, yeah, right. Yes.
Their ears.
That's right. Yeah, their ears are under there. That's about it.
I love the idea of protecting all that hay though, because like you said, the price is no joke. And there's nothing more disheartening than coming into a paddock or a pasture or a stall and seeing that all the beautiful hay that you provided has a fresh pile of
the back that's of right. the horse that's
on
right.
top of it. Like, guys, can you please not literally poop on the exact life-sustaining sustenance that I provided
I'm telling you. So the hay hut thing is fantastic. And the thing to consider is, let's say that you don't have an unlimited wallet share to be buying a ton of hay all the time. I understand. I hear you. This is an expensive sport and we're trying to do the best that we can. In that vein, the best thing you can do is protect your hay and conserve it the best that you can. So putting it in a feeder or a hay bag or preventing the horse from stepping on it or, like you just said, pooping on it, like the best thing that you can do. Make sure that every ounce of hay that you have paid for is going into that horse. That is, you know, conserving it.
I feel like it's a similar thought to when you buy a heavyweight turnout. Like, it's going to feel expensive at the beginning, but it's going to last and it's going to provide a long-term benefit, not just a one season or 1 month even benefit. So it not a small price point, but a very worthwhile one for those who can either, you know, make that work or start saving up or go in on it together, whatever it may be. So love that idea. And that kind of leads into too, because you have a big barn, you have horses who live out and in, and we've talked about a couple of things, but what other like tips and tricks do you guys have for managing such a big swath of horses who all need different levels of blankets? Like what works for you guys? What keeps it organized? What keeps it managed?
Yeah. So we have like little stall cards on the stalls where we allow our boarders to write like which color. I mean, many people have different colored blankets. I know that potentially in the hunter world, all of them like look very nice and have the same cording.
I've already had. We'll talk about that.
Okay, right. So I do know that some barns do have, you know, rules and regulations around color schemes and such. My barn is not one of those. So like Andy's blankets are all different colors. His heavyweight is navy blue. His medium weight is like purple. And then his like turnout sheet is black. So like I could write on his stall card. And again, these are numbers that I have trialed and errored with my own horse. So they're not going to be the same for everybody. But say, you know, 30 to 45 degrees, use this blanket. 20 to 30 degrees, use this blanket. If it gets under 20, you know, so you're kind of giving the staff an easy, foolproof way. And if you have the same color blanket, you could probably put like a little keychain or tag on it.
And we still carry those too. They're the round brass nameplates, but I used those on every single one of my Hunter Green blankets where it would say my horse's name, Hershey, on one side. So it was very obvious. And then on the back side, it would say, I think it was usually the weight. So I could just say, like, use the one that says med, M-E-D on the back for this day at this time. Use the one that says H-E-V, I think was what I used for heavy. But like keeping it really, really straightforward, really easy for everybody as much as possible. Because you're not always the one making, oh my God, you guys can't see it, but Ashley is literally holding
it. Just has my name on it. I just bought myself a keychain.
To make it identifiable for you or for right. your barn staff or anybody like that. Because I know there are times too where horses get really enthusiastic about my least favorite game in the world, blanket.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes they leave it in the pasture. And if your entire barn has navy or hunter or burgundy or black or whatever your assigned hunter color is, really hard to it tell. Is. So those brass name tags have really been a lifesaver for me in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I love them. Like literally, I'm holding one. The viewers can't see it or listeners can't see it. I'm holding one in my hand that just has my name on it. And I have a bunch of them. And I just put them on random things that otherwise, like three-stitch leather halters that don't have Andy's nameplate on it. Like, mm-hmm. how else are you going to know? So I just stick my little name tags everywhere. And they look pretty because they're made of like brass. They're not like paper or masking tape. They look really yeah. nice. So,
and the paper ones will work.
They will. Anybody they will. Yes. Those.
But keep in mind, they will only work for so long until they
That's
get wet.
Right. That's
so,
right.
There's always that to consider. But yeah, I love the idea of the blanket chart on the stalls, the name tags. Some people get the straps on their blankets yeah. embroidered. So it'll say like on the belly strap, you know, your horse's name or the love weight that. Or your name or whatever it needs to be. But lots of different options for like identifying and making that kind of thing easy for sure. And do you guys have like a consistent time of day? Like, is there an 8 a.m. blanket change, a 9 p.m. blanket change, or how does that work for you guys with so many horses?
Yeah. So typically what we're doing is as horses get turned out at like, I mean, depending on when the sun is coming up and down, but let's just say it's, you know, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning right now. They're going out, they're in their stable blankets or stable sheets, and then they have their turnouts that they go out in the morning. If it gets really warm during the day, which we've kind of seen it happen, like yesterday it got up to like 62 or 63. Yeah. Right. I mean, it was lovely, but there were certainly some warm horses out there. So, you know, peak day as things are starting to warm up, we'd go out, you know, over lunch or whenever we're starting to get the real heat of the day and either swap them out in some cases, if it's that warm, take them off altogether. And then again, they come back in the evening. And this would be a scenario where at night check, when we come back through the barn at around 9 o'clock, if we're expecting another dip overnight, the barn is heated, so it's typically pretty toasty and they all do okay in just a stable sheet. But in the event that they need something heavier, we would typically do that during night checks. So there's, you know, three or more opportunities in the day for us to be able to adjust what they're wearing to make sure that they feel like Goldilocks and they're not too hot and they're not too cold.
Just right.
That's right.
I know for the big hunter jumper barn that I was at for so long, it was a similar process. And for me, like keeping my horse at this nice barn in my 20s was a little bit outside of my financial range, but I was able to make that work by being, you know, the barn rat on Saturdays, Sundays, and at night in the winter, I was doing the late time feeding for a lot of horses, the last hay throw, but in the winter, I would do the last hay and I would do the blanket check. So it's like, you know, between 9 and 10, I'd go out, I'd swap out blankets as needed. And most of the time it was pretty straightforward. People would, you know, text me notes or the barn manager would leave me a list of who needed what swapped out. After a while, you just kind of get to know them too. So you can swap out what you know and what you see fit. But there was always one horse. God, I loved him. He was beautiful. Just this big, black, friendly creature, big white stripe, just so striking to look at. And he was so personable. So, and he was the first horse you saw when you walked in. And he was so freaking funny because his person kind of operated under the, if you're cold, they're cold. And I got it because like he had a really thin coat. Like he did not grow anything in the winter, but he just radiated heat. And he would hear me open that barn door. He'd hear
Help
me.
Pull out
and he would literally shriek at the top of his lungs and then throw himself to the ground. And the first couple nights I did this, I was like, oh my God, he's colicking. Something's wrong. Something's terrible. And each night I would simply unblanket him and he would do this big, beautiful deep breath, give a whole shake. And then I would wait until I did all the other 20, 30 horses that we had there at the time, come back and put whatever the next layer down was. Yeah. He was great overnight. Yeah. And I just thought he was the funniest. Like they're not all going to be that, that expressive sure. about their needs, but he sticks with me and I think of him all the time in the winter. And I hope that if he's, you know, still at that barn or if he's at a different barn now, that he is still expressing his needs loudly and clearly like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jenna, I so appreciate you and all the other barn staff that are doing the late night checks and get to know these horses sometimes in some cases better than their owners even know them. So shout out to you for going and doing blanket changes the night. Shout out to my staff And my incredible barn manager, Damien, certainly knows, I'm sure, Andy's tendencies better than I do because he gets to see him all day long. So like we said earlier in the podcast, you know, lean into your staff because they get to see 24 hours of your horses where, you know, we're seeing maybe 1 or 2 hours a day. So, you know, your people will certainly be able to help you in many cases as well.
Yeah. And as previous barn staff, if there's one thing I can just maybe suggest to anybody who is having staff do blanket changes, if you know or suspect or if it has been communicated to you that your horse has the tendency to try to take a chunk out of people who are changing their blankets, a gift card for coffee has never once gone in it. So just throwing that one out there, because there was more than one horse who had to be tied or haltered or would have to just have their head secured away from me in some way. And it's never a problem. Like, horses are going to express what they're going to express. I totally get that they're nervous about the static shock, or they just didn't want to be messed with, or they were itchy or tickly. I totally get it. But yeah, every now and then when somebody be like, hey, I know that, you know, my horse is not the easiest, like, please grab yourself a coffee. Thanks. Like, it always made it just extra appreciated. And I was a little less reluctant to go in and do that battle every night, knowing that I had a coffee waiting for me the next day.
Bless you sweet angel, and all other blanketers of biters.
Yeah, ugh. Out there fighting the good fight.
Fighting the good fight. You. Doing God's work.
You don't really do. And so, okay, we've talked a lot about a lot of blanketing things. And I think maybe just kind of going over some of the common things that we've talked about too is going to be a great way to start to wrap this up. Otherwise, we're just going to keep yapping as friends do. But I know the two things that I want to think about the most is kind of like what I said for that black horse, like try not to over blanket if you can. It's not if you're cold, they're cold. It's very much dependent on their situation, their body type, their whole life condition. So taking all of that into account, making sure that you are really thinking about your horse's like unique situation and unique needs. And then if you're not sure, you'd said this before, Ashley, but just checking under the blanket, just a little hand between their chest, between their front legs, like that makes such a big difference. Just if they feel a little cool, they're probably good. And if they feel a bit warm, maybe that's not so good. So using that little kind of guess and check temperature method has very rarely done me wrong. And I'm glad you brought that up earlier.
Yeah, I that's like my go-to is like, and sometimes if someone has to leave a little bit early after a ride and then we're not really sure, hey, could you just like run by Tig's stall and just like stick a hand under there before you leave tonight and just see how he feels? Sure, no problem. So like that easy telltale sign, check for shivering, you know, put your hand under there, see how they feel. One that I have, and I know I said it earlier, leaving wet blankets on. It is not the cold, it's the wet. A wet, cold horse is the worst thing you could have. If their blanket gets wet, even if it is like a turnout blanket that was designed to be waterproof, we know that like stitching sometimes can change the waterproofing. And, you know, if you had your blanket embroidered, that can change the waterproofing. So even if it's supposed to be waterproof, but for some reason it was not and it is wet, take it off and change it. Hang it up, let it dry. Do not assume that it's going to work. It is not. And it's just going to keep them wet and cold. So definitely don't leave wet blankets on and don't put them back on until they're dry. And like I think you said earlier, one blanket may not cut it for the whole winter. You know, you're going to have a lot of flux in the temperatures and the conditions, precipitation, wind, things are going to shift. I mean, think about when we start winter in like November to when we peak in January and then, you know, March when we're having 60 degree days, but 20 degree nights, you're going to probably have have a few different blankets in your lineup. If you're going to blanket, of course, you're going to have a few different blankets in your lineup and make sure that you're choosing the right one for the condition that your horse is subject to.
Yeah. And then the final takeaway that I will leave you with, and I'm sure you will agree with, is forage.
Oh, yeah.
Forage first.
Oh, yeah.
Forage all.
Of course.
Forage as much as possible. Like, if there's anything we can leave you with besides, you know, blanketing is an individual sport, good luck. It is, please feed as much forage, high quality forage as you possibly can.
I feel like we could probably open every topic of the podcast by saying that. Like every episode, regardless of what the topic is like, okay, hi guys, welcome back to the pod. It's Jenna and Ashley. Don't forget, forage first. Like, that is, I think that truly is like a cornerstone of all things. So whether it's nutrition, like we talked about last week, you know, many of our episodes revolve around nutrition and a proper feeding program. Obviously, longstem forage is important for that. Now we're talking about warmth and blanketing and surviving the winter. Longstem forage is important for that. We talk about physiological function and hindgut fermentation and colic risks. long stem forage is important for that. So at the basis of all things is that these creatures were designed to be eating all the time. So the best thing that you can do for them in almost every facet is to make sure that you are mimicking their feed design the best that you can. Long stem forage.
Absolutely.
We're making t-shirts. This is also going into our imaginary merch line that doesn't exist. Forage first. I want a baseball cap that does that.
Yeah, yours will be forage first. Mine will be treat your horse like an individual. Or if you're just starting out, you're still doing
that's
great.
Right.
But all these things are so very true. And I think that's a great place to wrap it up on or to throw a blanket over. Oh. So we'll call it on that, guys.
Love it.
Thank you. Yeah, just came up with that myself. So stick around and we're going to go through some giveaway stuff here in a second. And then we'll catch you later.
Ready for our next giveaway? As of the start of this episode, Blanketing Made Better, we're giving away a new Smart Equine prize package. The winner will receive a $25 Smart Equine gift card, a Smart Equine travel blanket, and a Smart Equine thermos. You can enter to win by clicking or tapping on the link in the podcast description, which will take you directly to our giveaway form, or you can go to www.smartequine.com/podcast giveaway. This giveaway is going to be open all month long, so if you are listening to this at any point during March of 2026, be sure to get your entry in, and good luck.
You can find links to today's products in the show notes on your podcast player or on our website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog.
We are here twice a month on the 15th and the 30th, or the 28th sometimes. In between, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Smart Equine or shop online at smartequine.com. So until next time, stay smart, stay warm,
and give your horse a cookie from us.